Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Spillers After Show podcast. I am one host, Brian Dunn.
I am the other host, Robert Hookman Jr.
And we are here to talk about all things Spillers. And we are talking about Spillers number 3 that just happened tonight, Robert.
Literally just ended not 45 minutes ago.
Yep.
We had a fantastic crowd at Crescent Ballroom tonight. We were in the large ballroom, and I think we've mentioned this on other podcast episodes at the moment. But, yeah, we had a very solid crowd, and it was really impressive considering it's a Monday night, and we had a whole bunch of Phoenicians come out to join us for some good local literature.
Yes, we did, and it was a cold Monday night to boot, so...
You know,
the fact that they
Monday
came
night.
Out under those conditions, that's I think that's even more impressive.
So who do we have here with us tonight?
All right, so we have a very talented young writer. He read his short story, A Curious Animal. It's Troy Farah. Hey, Troy.
Hi, nice to meet you guys. Well, I've met you guys before.
Yeah. Just not under these circumstances, I guess.
It's nice to be here on the podcast.
It's a strange, contrived situation. We're all sitting in a green room in the back of the Crescent Ballroom
right now. In the bowels of the Crescent Ballroom. I like to
surrounded
think of it.
By strange... strange collection of framed pictures that don't seem to form any cohesive theme at all. There's a Shakespeare, John Wayne, there's a Native American guy.
That might be by design, I'm thinking.
It's an eclectic mix.
It's kind of crazy.
Actually says a lot about Charlie Levy, who owns Crescent Ballroom.
He's
a very eclectic guy.
Yes, he must be. So, Troy, you read A Curious Animal. For those of you who are not fortunate enough to be here to listen to him read it live, check out episode 7 of the podcast. Is that right?
I think it might be 8.
Episode 8 of the podcast. You'll be able to hear the live recording of what he did tonight.
Yeah.
And I guess the first thing that I have to ask is, you know, Robert and I, we've been talking about the stories leading up to this event, and we thought when we read your story, Kafka. And you mentioned tonight that Kafka... You said it not just that he was an influence, but that you actually like based this short story off of a Kafka short story.
I don't want to say based. I want to say inspired by.
I didn't mean based.
Yeah, I'm actually flattered that Kafka came up because Kafka is probably my favorite writer. Hard to pick a favorite, but he's definitely up there. He has been since I read A Hunger Artist in high school, and I was like, how can people write like this? This is amazing. And I've always been impressed by him. But he's got a large body of work, and I hadn't read everything by him. So in last fall, I read something I hadn't read before called A Half-Breed.
Okay.
It's about a half-cat, half-sheep animal, and it's just 3 pages of describing the animal. And I really like the idea of this idea of... some creature that you couldn't figure out where it was from and how it had this relationship to this human being. And I kind of expanded on that and did my own totally different thing with a primate thing.
Right.
But yeah, so there's this musician I really like. Her name is Springtime Carnivore. And she says that when she writes a song, she puts an artist in her mind and says, I'm going to write a David Bowie song today, or I'm going to write, you know, a Talking Heads song today. And so I've been trying to do that with my own writing. And over the summer, I tried to write something that was like an Amy Hempel story. And then this was trying to write something that was like Kafka.
Very cool. Yeah. I think it definitely came through because we picked up on it. And the story is great. It really is. We thoroughly enjoyed hearing you read it.
Thank
and
you.
Also, what a fantastic writing exercise to just try to, you know, write a story that one of your favorite writers would write.
In that style,
In that style, in that voice, to try to sort of almost like ghostwriting, like what Keith was talking about, where you sort of try to take on another person's personality and write in that voice.
Well, to be honest,
it's a fantastic exercise.
To be honest, in every instance of this, I fail miserably.
Oh, you do? I was going to ask, which one was the most difficult to pull off for you?
I've only been doing this for a year, and I've gotten like 3 out of it. But every single time I fail miserably, like my own writing pales in comparison to these other writers I'm trying to rip off.
Now, wait a second. You chastised me when I said based on, and now you just said ripped off. Which is it, Troy?
But I mean, it would be based off it, I think, if it was like the same kind of animal.
Right.
But inspired by it. Yeah, not ripped off.
Yours was more of a primate. Just let the record show. It's
right.
A primate in your story. All right.
But yeah. So I do fail miserably in this, but in the process, I do discover something about myself as a writer and something about my own voice. And I'll never be able to imitate something completely. And it's okay to rip off, be inspired, or base something off something. I'm not against
that.
Yeah. So that's why I feel like this is a good exercise.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you write for Phoenix New Times and for Vice Magazine pretty frequently, yes?
Yeah, I try to, yeah.
Talk about that. So there was an interesting article recently about something about ingesting 2 tabs of acid before taking in a Mormon temple open house.
Yeah, that one sort of jumped out a little bit.
That was 2 years ago. And actually, it's been on my mind a lot lately because of the 2-year anniversary. But what happened was I've been trying to pitch stuff to Vice for a while, and they kept saying no, and this is boring, because not a lot of stuff that's interesting in Phoenix happens unless it's like insanely political, and I'm not much of a political writer. So this Mormon temple open house happened, and they only opened the Mormon temples to the public when they first build them. And I asked Vice if I could do a review of this, and they said, well, that sounds like it would be pretty boring. They have an On Acid series. I didn't invent this.
Oh, they have an On Acid series. I mean, I wasn't even aware of that.
Yeah,
oh,
that's brilliant. I mean, obviously, okay. Hunter S. Thompson is the On Acid guy.
He is the On Acid guy.
And I see you're wearing a shirt of his.
I absolutely am.
Awesome. But they've been doing things like, you know, going to a truck rally on acid, a dog show on acid. And I wanted to do this on acid because I feel like...
Those are kind of the places you'd expect to be on acid.
Yeah. Or it helps. But I feel like LSD can be kind of spiritual, and I'm not Mormon. I do have some religious background, but I wanted to see how these... two spiritual things might intersect, and it turned out they didn't intersect very well at all.
Not at all.
But LDS on LSD.
On LSD.
Fox News
put the letters, or if you just switch them around.
LDS on LSD.
I put that in the article, and they took it out.
They did?
They said it was too obvious or something.
Oh, that sounds right clever.
Really?
Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, anagrams.
But Fox News picked up on the story, and
Fox News did.
Less than a week later, I was fired because my boss watched Fox News religiously.
Oh no! Are you serious?
I love the way that they introduced me on Fox News. They said,
"Oh my god!"
Well, some call it sacrilegious, and others just say it's disrespectful. Just giving me such good options.
Wow, that is an amazing story.
And was there a particular writer you were trying to be inspired by? At the time that you took the acid and went to the Mormon temple?
I mean, Thompson, obviously, he was a big influence on me in high school and part of the reason why I became a journalist. But I like the fact that Thompson was a journalist first and a drug addict or drug user second.
Right.
And, you know, his getting to the root of the story came first for him.
He had a good sense of priorities, that guy.
Yeah. He wouldn't be remembered if he hadn't been... you know, responsible.
Yeah, see, you know, that's the thing that gets me about people who critique Hunter and they say, oh, you know, he was just a drug user and he was just high all the time or he was on acid. You know, they totally overlook the fact that what he wrote was just incredible, incredible stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't discount that. You can't just paint it with, you know, with a brush that says, oh, this guy was just high all the time, because, you know, he wrote some incredibly insightful political stuff. And obviously I'm a big fan, so I'm glad to hear that you like him as well.
Yeah. So on that note, you said once that getting a journalism degree was actually the best thing to happen to your writing career. Is that was that inspired by Hunter as well?
Well, my father told me that most good writers started out as journalists because journalism is cheap, quick writing that is about other people, and it gets you have a built-in audience. And so I've always wanted to be a writer. And it seems like the good way to break into it. You know, lots of, like, Chuck Palahniuk was a journalist for a while. Steinbeck was a journalist. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to get good practice in. And so, while a lot of other people, you know, they'll go to school for an MFA in English or something like that, journalism was the thing that I wanted to pursue.
But would you recommend that to somebody starting now? Or I thought I read something
No.
Okay, that's what I thought I read. You said something like get a legit job that pays more money, right? And practice your craft on the side.
If I could go back to school, I'd go back to school for chemistry. So first of all, I could make my own drugs. And second of all, I could get a job that paid well. But I learned everything I needed to know about journalism in about 6 weeks, you know, the inverted pyramid, the AP style, and that kind of thing. And then everything else I learned in the field. Like I got an internship completely, can I swear on this?
Absolutely.
Completely fucked it up.
So I have a question. Is that the blueberry picking story?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Can you tell the blueberry picking story? I thought that was so funny.
Okay, so I was at this internship in Laconia, New Hampshire, and they basically had me doing the calendars, and I was like, I'm trying to do journalism here. And at this point, I'd only done reviews, like, and political op-eds and stuff. I hadn't really, like, done reporting. I hadn't really interviewed people.
Okay.
So they told me to call up these people and interview them. I call them up on the phone. I don't have a recorder, so I'm trying to type on the phone their answers, which is not going well because I can't type as fast as this guy's talking. And at the end of the interview, I didn't get his name.
Right.
And so instead of calling him back and being like, what's your name? I decided to look it up on the internet. I found the farm and I saw that there's a name here. All right, that must be it.
That must be it.
Well, this little farmer, you know, he gets the paper and he's excited to be in the paper. So it's a big deal to him. And he was pissed that it wasn't him.
The wrong name is
in
there.
So he called up my editor and I didn't get assigned any more stories.
Back to the calendar.
Yeah, back just doing the calendar.
Yep.
So that was a big lesson for me in journalism. But those kinds of lessons I could have learned totally without getting $30,000 in debt to Northern Arizona University.
Sure.
Here's a funny story. I actually never got my degree. I finished all my classes for journalism. Did some study abroad programs, which completely fucked up my transcripts, and so I had to take summer classes online.
Oh, jeez.
And when I finally got everything finished, they said it'll be $35 to process your degree. And I didn't have $35, so I never processed.
You never processed it?
I never got the piece of paper.
Now, wait a second. Is there a statute of limitations? Could you come back at any point in time and say, I have my $35, or at this point, is it just on principle you will not do that?
I could, I'm sure, unless they change the degree requirements and, like, I need to take a different class or something like that, but I really don't care at this point. I put it on my resume because I did the work.
You did do the work.
And I didn't walk because I don't like the charade of wearing a black robe and whatever. But
I kind of want to get him $35 for Christmas.
I'll chip in 20 right here.
It's been
right
5 years, so it's at this point I don't care. I have the credentials and journalism to get a job if I needed to.
It has not held you back.
That's another thing, is you don't need a degree in journalism to get a job in journalism, so why not go for something that you can learn to keep yourself afloat while doing that on the side? I could have taken extracurricular journalism classes and done just as well.
I read for downtownphoenixjournal.com, literally journal in the name.
Journal is in the name.
And I didn't go anywhere near journalism.
And you are not a journalism
student. Most of my editors at New Times didn't have a degree in journalism either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, that is. So kids, listen to Troy.
New level of respect for the New Times.
Awesome. Well, Troy, we really enjoyed your story, A Curious Animal. Thank you so much for coming out tonight and reading for everybody. I think everybody liked it a ton. And thank you so much for being a guest here on the podcast. We love having you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right, man. Thanks, Troy.